It comes back to the bottom line always, not enough funding.
It seems to me that the European community is certainly making a very serious commitment to it, and their targets are way beyond, they're looking way beyond Kyoto.
Yes.
They're serious about it, and they're committing the funds.
Yes.
Now, my government of Canada, I'm very proud that our government did sign, despite huge pressure from Mr. Bush not to sign. We ratified Kyoto. The challenge now is we did bugger all since 1997.
Yes.
And so the result is that our emissions now are 30% above what they were in 1990. The consequence then is a challenge. Sorry, not 30%, 22 or 23%. So the challenge now is that we have to reduce by 30% from what we are now. So the cost of this and the challenge of being able to do it by 2010 is enormous.
It is enormous.
And I don't think we're going to make it other than by buying credits from Russia or something like that, which is just a cop-out.
So what you said in your review of David Boyd's book, you say humankind is undergoing an unprecedented and totally unsustainable growth in numbers, technology, consumption, and economic demand. Environmental degradation is a direct consequence. Without a fundamental understanding of our utter dependence on nature for our physical, social, and economic and spiritual sustenance and health, we become predators embarked upon a suicidal path. Now, I just wanted to ask you, why, as intelligent beings, should we have become the predators of our environment?
Right. Well, we've always been predators. We've never had the kind of power of numbers, technological muscle power, as we do today. But we've always been predators. Tim Flannery, the Australian, wrote Future Eaters, points out that what we've always done is we've come into new areas, we've overexploited our resources, and we either move or we stay in one place and learn how to live in balance. But we learn that at a huge cost.
Well, of course.
I mean, when you think when the first settlers in Australia came, the entire continent was covered in a forest. But because the whole technology of burning was introduced, this continent was transformed into the desert that it is by the burning technology. But by the time, then Aborigines found ways to live in balance with a radically degraded environment.
Well, yes.
Okay. So we learn to live in balance after we've already trashed a great deal of it. The problem now is we're trashing the whole planet and we don't have anywhere else to go. Okay. The fact is that for most of human history, people understood that we were deeply embedded in the natural world and dependent on it. If you go to a traditional community like Native Americans in Canada and listen to their stories and their prayers and their songs, it's all about telling us who they are, where they belong on this earth. They celebrate being part of nature. They thank their creator for nature's abundance and generosity. They acknowledge, because they're part of nature, they've got responsibilities, and they promise they're going to act the right way. That's the way it's been, right? But for most of us, we no longer see that. Most of us live in big cities. We don't see that everything is connected. We live in a shattered world of bits and pieces. And we no longer see how we interact with those pieces, and we don't have any sense of responsibility. So we've got an economic system now that allows us to go and buy a shirt without ever asking, is that organic cotton or not? Yet our cotton is one of the most chemically intensive crops we grow. But we don't ask a question like that. We just want to buy the shirt and wear it.
As cheaply as possible.
Exactly. So we buy a car, a TV, or a computer. We don't say, gee, there must be dozens of metals in here. Mining is a very destructive activity. Where was it mined and what were the... We don't ask any of those questions. So, and it's the same with food. I mean, my God, we don't give a damn where the food came from. And we don't, unless, you know, you buy organic. But people pay very little attention to the food that they're going to put into their bodies. I mean, I've been astonished since I've been in Australia at the amount of salmon being fed everywhere. You don't have salmon in Australia. Those are not wild salmon. No. Those are farm salmon.
Yeah.
Nobody asks the question, why the hell are we eating all this farm salmon? It's bad for us. Mm. It's loaded with toxic chemicals.
Yeah.
Because they're biomagnified, the chemicals are biomagnified, because salmon are carnivores. We don't grow any carnivores on land to eat. That would be like saying, I want to eat lions and tigers. We're going to feed them sheep, goats, and chickens, and we're going to eat lions and tigers. Nobody, people would say that's stupid, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet we grow a fish, and we don't pay any attention to the fact that fish needs fish. It's a carnivore. So we feed them fish that have come from South America, which are the food fish for native people there. We take sardines, herring, anchovies, grind them up, make pellets, and concentrate what's in them. Then we feed the pellets to the salmon and concentrate. So if you test farmed salmon, they're filled with dioxin, PCBs, dieldrin, DDT, and the latest discovery, flame retardant.
Walter, what I wanted to ask you was, and to put to you, that there is another question that we never ask, and that is the reason why so-called highly technological society that has science backing it does go along this degrading path. Why do we never ask the question, why can't we afford? And I can assure you that that's the answer I get every time I look at anybody's interview. We can't afford. The government can't afford to implement the recommendations of David Suzuki's report
right.
on whatever it is. We really can't afford to do it.
Right.
And it's industry saying the same thing as well as government.
Yeah.
Why do we never question that? Where's the scarcity?
Because we've bought into this notion that the economy is the source of everything that matters. So I actually had an environment minister tell me, listen, Suzuki, if we don't have a strong growing economy, we can't afford to protect the environment. So you see, the economy is seen as the source of everything.
Right.
And as long as the economy's happy, healthy, then we can afford to do these other things. And my response to him is, listen, buddy, we don't have an environment. We don't have economists or politicians. The hell's going on? The problem is this. Economics has come to dominate our lives. If any expert economist so much as farts, we write whole stories about this.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that says, gee, I woke up this morning, my big toe hurts, I think the market's going to fall, their paper media are filled with stories, right? Scientists tell us we're in deep trouble. The oceans are empty, the atmosphere is changing, water is polluted. We don't pay any attention at all. So we think the economy is everything. Okay. Go and take Economics 101. In the first class, the professor will show a slide of the economy. And this is very impressive. Economists are trying to snow us as if they're a science. They're not. It's a set of values. But they have all these, you know, computer analyses and all this bullshit, and they think that this is a science. Anyway, they'll show you the economy, and you'll see raw materials, extraction, process, manufacture, wholesale, with arrows going back and forth. And the idea is, if you know everything that makes up an economy, then you can tweak it with an incentive here or a tax here and disincentive, and you can manage the economy and keep it going. But then if you ask this professor, excuse me, in that diagram, where does the ozone layer fit? Where do you put underground aquifers of fossil water? Where do you put topsoil or biodiversity? Do you know what the answer is? Any economist will say, oh, those are externalities. Now, I'd never heard the word externality used this way. But what externality used by an economist means is those have got nothing to do with the economy. Those are outside.
Exactly.
Well, if you externalize the real world, you might as well be on Mars. It's got nothing to do with the world we live in. So the problem with it, we've now come to think the economy is the source of everything that matters. But the economy we bought into says the environment or nature is not a part of it.
Thank you.
No wonder we're so screwed up in the way that we're trying to deal with these situations, and we say we can't afford it.
That is wonderful. Is economic reform, and how do we go about bringing about an economy or a financial system that provides us with finance that will enable us to put in place all these recommendations from science? Just leave it at that.
I don't think that it's going to happen through economic reform. I really think that we, you know, being told that the economy is a bottom line, there's a much more profound bottom line, and that's got to become the priority. Yeah. And that priority is determined by the fact that we're animals. Long before we had economies, human beings made a living and did very well.
Yeah.
Because our ultimate fundamental bottom line is, if we don't have clean air, we're dead. If we don't have clean water, clean soil that gives us our food, and clean energy that comes from the sun, forget it. So why the hell is it that we don't put air, water, and soil as the absolute bottom line? Whatever you're going to do, you don't mess with the air, water, and soil, because that's what gives us life.
What's what I'm saying,
that's Dad? The bottom line. Economics, that's for you to figure out later. But first of all, you don't mess around with my air, water, and soil.
And it's not happening, and they will not. They'll be unable to actually bring about a sustainable economy under the present system of creating all money as a debt and loaning it at interest.
Oh, well, Hazel Hansen says this kind of economic system we've got is a form of brain damage.
Yes.
And she's absolutely right. The brain damage starts with the externalizing the real world. But we compound the brain damage by the most terrible aspect, because economists think externalize the real world. What is at the base of the economy if you discount everything else? It's us. Humans are so creative and inventive and productive. We're at the heart of the economy. And there are no limits to human inventiveness, so there are no limits to the economy. Because that means the economy can keep growing forever. How can you live within a finite world, the biosphere,
that's something that must keep
and
growing.
Think something can grow forever? That's a form of brain damage.
What is?
Well, they say, oh, well, we'll go to the moon, and we'll convert Mars, and we'll terraform Mars, and we'll live on Mars. Mm-hmm. If we run out of energy, we can lasso stars and pull them in and use that. People are proposing this sort of lunacy. We have somehow forgotten our biological nature. We think we're so clever that we've invented a system that can just grow forever. Now, let me just, I know we've run out of time, but let me just give you a very powerful reason why we've got to get off this.
Right.
Anything growing steadily over time is called exponential growth. Anything growing exponentially has a predictable doubling time. If it's growing at 1% a year, whether it's the amount of garbage you make, the amount of land you use, the number of people in a city, anything growing at 1% a year will double in 70 years, 2% in 35 years, 3% in 24 years, 4% in 17 and a half years. We have a predictable doubling time. Okay, I'm going to give you a system analogous to the Earth, and it's a test tube.
A test tube.
Full of, you know this story?
Of course.
Full of food for bacteria. I'm going to put one bacterial cell in, and it is going to divide every minute. That's exponential growth. So at time zero, there's one cell. 1 minute, there are two. 2 minutes, there are four. 3 minutes, there are eight. That's exponential growth. And at 60 minutes, the test tube's completely full and there's no food left. Okay? So when is a test tube half full? At 59 minutes. So at 58 minutes, it's 25% full. At 57 minutes, it's 12.5% full. At 55 minutes of a 60-minute cycle, it's 3% full. So if at 55 minutes one of the bacteria said, hey guys, I think we got a population problem, the other bacteria would say, what the hell have you been smoking, man? 97% of the test tube's empty and we've been around for 55 minutes. And they'd be 5 minutes away from filling. So bacteria are no smarter than people. 59 minutes, they go, oh my God, Jack's right, we got a population problem. The hell are we going to do? Give that money to, not to the economists, give that money to those geneticists and those computer guys, and by God, in less than a minute, they make 3 new test tubes full of food. So they quadrupled the amount of food in space. So they're saved, right? What happens? 60 minutes, all the first one's full. 61 minutes, second's full. 62 minutes, all four are full. So by quadrupling the amount of food in space, you buy 2 extra minutes. How do we quadruple the number of species? How do we quadruple air, water, soil? You can't. And every biologist I've talked to has said, we are past the 59th minute. All these guys that are saying we got to have more are saying we've got to commit suicide faster. It is suicidal because, first of all, we don't ask the critical question, how much is enough? Do I need more? The hell do we got all this growth for? And we just dig this hole. Now, when I say this to business people, they get very pissed off at me.
Oh, yes.
How dare you say that? Look at us. We're living longer. The stores are filled with stuff. How are you talking about we're in the 59th minute? Yeah, you know why? We're using up the rightful legacy of our children and grandchildren as if this is progress.
Yes.
That's deficit financing, and that's what we're involved in
now. And it's irreplaceable.
That's exactly.
Thank you, Professor.
Okay.